With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. 1 hour left. We're off early tonight. The NCAA tournament coverage kicking off here on The Fan right at 6 o'clock. Speaking to the tourney right now on the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com. Our friend Ian Eagle, who's got two games to call tonight on TBS. Alabama and San Diego State, a 1-5 at 6:30. And then Creighton and Princeton, a 6-15 tonight. The winners are on to the final eight teams remaining in this NCAA tournament. Chronologically, Ian, you got Alabama, you got San Diego State, you got Creighton and Princeton. You got your hands full.
Yeah. First of all, I thought we were going to go chronologically. My parents met in 1968. Stuff happened. Yeah, everything you laid out is part of the story here in Louisville. I think it's one of those pairings where you get a little bit caught up in the Cinderella part of it with Princeton, but I can tell you that yesterday at practice, they were not acting like a Cinderella. They did not have the vibe of a team that was just so happy to be here, and whatever happens from here on out, it's gravy. So let's start with the first game. You've got Alabama, San Diego State. Alabama, very deep. They have a great offense, but they're a top five defense in the country as well. San Diego State hangs its hat on its defense. They're also deep, maybe not quite as deep as Alabama. They're very physical. They're not the offensive team Alabama is, but they've got a nice balance. You know, it's shocking to me. They have one player that averages double figures. That's not common that you get to the Sweet 16 with one player that averages double figures, but that's what they got in Matt Bradley with 4 points tonight. He'll top 1,000 points at San Diego State. He had over 1,000 at Cal. So that would be two different schools where he scored 1,000. We're going to start seeing that a lot more because of the transfer portal, but he really is a nice player, fundamentally sound. He's the go-to guy. But they've got other pieces, and I think Brian Dutcher believes his team has a legitimate chance because, in a way, they mirror what Alabama does. Maybe they don't quite do it at the same level and the same level of conference, but San Diego State is a team that believes that they should be here. This was talked about before the season, and they are not going to be overwhelmed by the idea that they're taking on the number one team in the country.
And, you know, the elephant in the room around Alabama, and there's no delicate or gentlemanly way to kind of to do this, but there's a tragedy that sort of surrounds them and yes. some things that shouldn't have been, and yet they seem to be able to block that out in terms of everything around them, the questions that I understand. And listen, I'm not here to determine who should be eligible, who shouldn't, or what punishments should be. The game is tonight. All of their full complement is going to be there playing. How have they been able to do that? And kind of what have you heard from them in terms of just saying, hey, we got a basketball game and everything else is everything else?
Yeah, it's interesting. The first week compared to the second week. First week, there are eight practices the day before the games, but they're really more shoot-arounds. They're for the media. They're for the fans. More often than not, those teams will go somewhere else and have their real practice where they get after it. And in that session, first weekend, yeah, they're just going through the motions to some degree for the public forum. This week, the second weekend, that practice that they have is not open to the media. It is open to the CBS TNT broadcasters. And it's an hour 45. And these guys went hard. Nate Oates, there's an intensity with how he runs this program. And then there is a very visceral feeling in and around their team. They talk trash to one another. They are going at a very high level. They're not walking through anything. yeah, there were a couple of even skirmishes between teammates that got heated after a rebound or after a loose ball. And in talking to people close to the program, they said this is who they've been all year. There's an expectation level with this team. As mentioned, they are stacked. They go 11 deep. They mix and match starters, bench players. If one of the bench players gets a hot hand, he might see extended action. But Brandon Miller is really the guy that makes it go, along with Javon Quinterly. How they've balanced all this, look, the one thing that I'm certainly aware of and very much conscious of on the broadcast tonight, at no point am I going to view it that they've dealt with challenges or they've handled the distractions. This is something that affects the program because of a tragedy. And I think word usage, vocabulary, and nomenclature is really important, and tone is really important as well. So I don't want to cross the wires here to say that Alabama's overcoming something, because that's just not the case.
Ian Eagle, who is one of the best in the business, joins us on Grant and Danny. Before we get back into basketball, you've kind of just piqued my interest from a play-by-play standpoint as a play-by-play nerd. I mean, do you talk about how you're going to discuss this with anyone? Like, are there people you trust that you say, hey, what do you think is the right tone to strike here? Or is that just instinct based on being so good for so long?
It depends. It depends on who you're working with on your crew. It depends on that dynamic and that relationship. There are people in New York at the home office that I trust their opinion. In this case, I would rather know that everybody's on the same page as far as how we're going to handle it. And as you mentioned, the tone of how we're handling it. So our producer is Craig Silver. He's been doing this forever. He produces the SEC on CBS, and he's done that for 20 plus years. He's used to producing big events. I think he has a really good feel for the delicate balance that comes into play. And we do have people in New York that we can bounce ideas off of. So it isn't a solo effort. There's definitely a team concept here. We had a production meeting last night. It is discussed. You can't go through every possible storyline in a game. There are moments where, of course, the play-by-play announcer has to trust his or her instincts in the moment, that this is important, that this is a priority. And that's happening every game, no matter if it's a local broadcast, national broadcast, radio broadcast, internet broadcast. When you've got 2.5 hours of airtime, 3 hours of airtime, as you guys know, there are things you discuss maybe before the show, and then sometimes the show takes it in a different direction, and you're venturing into territory that you two had never, ever talked about. But you've got to trust one another that you're going to take it in the right place and handle it in the right manner. And that's how it is. I think for me, the way I try to boil it down, the lowest common denominator when it comes to this for me is simply, what would I want if I was sitting in my living room, sitting in my kitchen, watching this game? What do I want to know? What's the information I need? And am I being entertained during the process? How do you strike that necessary balance of 2.5 hours of broadcast coverage and doing right by the event that you're covering?
We'll be watching them on TBS this evening. Ian, one more on Bama before we get to the second game, and that would just be, I'm trying to find their flaw here. They beat Maryland by 22, Texas A&M CC by 21. Yeah. In fact, I'm going back. You got to go back 6 games to find their last win by single digits. I think they won their conference tournament by 20-plus points as well. What is their kryptonite? Like, if you're looking at them and putting a game plan together, where's the flaw?
Yeah, the only Achilles heel I can find statistically is turnovers. And if you can turn them over, if you can force them into mistakes, they have turned the ball over 18-plus times in 4 of their 5 losses.
Wow.
So that's the only thing that stands out to me of all the numbers that we've been presented over the last week preparing for this game. And for all of the information on the number one team in the country, there's a reason why they're the number one overall seed. They are the best team on paper. They have the best roster in college basketball. They have the most depth in college basketball. And they have been tested. They have played a tough schedule. They have come through the SEC at 16-2. They are number one in the country in rebounds per game. So sometimes maybe a really good offensive team, you can find an edge, an advantage on the boards if you just out-physical them. No, that's not the case. They're among the best scoring teams in the country, top five. You go, okay, well, defensively then, there must be a lapse. No, they're number three in defensive efficiency. They're the most complete team in the nation.
Our guy Ian Eagle with us here on G&D. And Ian, I'm going to have to ask you to trust me on this. Don't ask any follow-up questions. Just trust me. I had Princeton and Creighton matching up in all my brackets. I just did. I mean, I'm really, really smart, and I'm good at this. I love this Creighton team, and I want to get to Princeton here in a second. I know they had that, was it 5 or 6-game losing streak in the middle of the year, which I think knocked them out of, you know, everybody's kind of national conversation. But this is a balanced team. It's deep. They shoot threes. Kalkbrenner and Alexander, I think, are splendid. This is a group that, to me, is a sneaky, you know, Elite Eight kind of Final Four type team, and here they are with the chance to do that. Give me your scouting report and breakdown of them and their chances tonight.
If you would have told Greg McDermott before the season started, look, I'm not going to tell you how you got there, but you're going to be in the Sweet 16, and you're going to play an Ivy League team with a chance to go to the Elite Eight. I think him and everybody associated with Creighton signs up for that on the dotted line without having any knowledge of the journey and the voyage to get there. Simply put, it's been a weird year. They went to Hawaii. Everybody on the team got sick after that trip. Everybody other than Ryan Kalkbrenner bounced back physically. For 2 weeks, he just didn't have it. They kept asking him, what's going on? He's like, I'm fatigued. He tried to play through it. They watched the tape. They said, why didn't you go after that rebound? He said, I physically couldn't. I was not in a position to do it because I was in pain. And ultimately, he worked through that. They went 0-6 during that stretch. So you just laid it out. They're not a 6 seed. If that didn't happen earlier in the season, you're looking at a 3 seed. You're looking at a 4 seed. And then maybe it wouldn't be considered a surprise, per se, of what they've done. Their starting five is excellent. They've got every box checked in their starting five. They just don't have much of a bench. They play 6, 7. Mike Miller's son might be available, the former Florida Gator and 17-year pro Mason Miller. Lefty comes off the bench. Right now he just shoots threes, but down the road they think he can be an all-around player. They play Farabello off the bench, a kid from Argentina that makes corner threes. They'll play big body Frederick King off the bench, and a little bit of Sharif Mitchell, point guard, if necessary. That's it. And even that's pushing it. They basically play their five guys. Ryan Nemhart coming off a tremendous game where he scored 30 points. He didn't miss at the free throw line. In fact, Creighton as a team did not miss. They were 22 of 22 against Baylor, the number 3 seed. They beat them handily in the second round. This team's legit. They had a player that was highly coveted as a transfer, Baylor Shireman. Came out of South Dakota State. Everybody wanted him. Duke wanted him. Kentucky wanted him. Everybody wanted him. He chose Creighton, and it's been a really good fit.
And the only thing standing between them and the Elite Eight, as you mentioned, is a 15 seed in Princeton, who hasn't played like one. How good are they actually?
They're really good. And I know the perception, everybody will just assume, oh, it must be like the Pete Carril teams. They're doing it with gadget plays. They're doing it with backdoor cuts. And yes, of course, there's a little bit of that because Mitch Henderson was a standout at Princeton. He was part of those teams in the mid to late 90s that went to the NCAA tournament, the upset over UCLA. We sat down with Mitch yesterday. We sat through practice yesterday. That's not this team. This team is doing it in a different manner. He has injected them with confidence that they belong here, that they deserve to be here, that athletically they can play with anybody in the country. They proved that, obviously, in the huge upset over Arizona. They backed it up with another win over Missouri. So that's a victory over the Pac-12. That's a victory over the SEC. And, guys, I'll tell you, when I do the first weekend of the tournament, I'm so immersed in my 8 teams. I was in Greensboro last week, Xavier, Kansas State. Those were the 2 teams that emerged. And, yes, you'll watch other games. It's on in the background or it's on in your hotel room while you're doing work. But you're not in it like you are with your 8 teams. So when you get the assignment for the next weekend, in my case Louisville, you start looking at tape. And my assumption was, oh, I'll watch the Princeton-Missouri tape and, you know, I'm going to see some stuff that's unique and different. No. They just beat them. They were better than them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about that game that struck me that, oh, wow, this team was overmatched and found a way. They weren't. And that's not the vibe that I get from them. They don't see themselves as a Cinderella, and I think that perspective has allowed them to flourish. The big stage has not been a big deal for them. They played in an NBA arena last week in Sacramento, and obviously you get the swing vote in these games where fans that have no real rooting interest, but they feel the underdog story, so they get behind it. They had that going for them. They're playing in a 22,500-seat arena this week in Louisville, the Yum Center. And I don't think this is too big for them. I know we're conditioned in March to talk about the upsets and the shockers. I don't know if shocker is a word that we can use anymore in the NCAA tournament. Parity is so apparent now in college basketball with FAU emerging now in the Elite Eight and St. Peter's last year. I think the transfer portal and where we are, the space we're living in now in college basketball, is where we're going to be for quite some time. If you have excellent chemistry and connectivity, you can win games in this tournament, no matter what it says on the front of your jersey.
Couple cough drops, water with lemon, and honey with tea. Two calls tonight. Can't wait to watch you, buddy. Thanks for the time, as always.
Yeah, really excited, guys. Looking forward to it. Always great talking to you.
Best in the Biz, Iron Eagle with us on Grant and Danny. Next, let's go around the NFL. A plethora of moves made today. Transactions. We'll take a dive into who's expected to win each division based on some of the player movement we've seen over the last several weeks right here on G&D. Big thanks to Iron Eagle for joining the show. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. If you missed our interview with Iron or any part of today's broadcast, when we are done, which is earlier than normal today, at 6 o'clock coming up in a half hour, you'll have to podcast thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio. Let's spin you around the NFL, get you the latest news and notes, all the reports from the day that has been in football, teams trying to put the finishing touches on some of the contracts they've been negotiating this week before they go into the weekend and the close of business today. Bobby Wagner, still unsigned, had a really good year last year with the Rams, the longtime Seattle Seahawk. Seahawks GM John Schneider, said that the team is still in talks with Wagner, trying to bring him back. Do you realize, even though the Rams moved on from him after one season, he made 140 tackles and had 6 sacks last season?
Feels like he could still play. They just sort of couldn't. They can't afford the bill.
He was
anymore,
sensational.
Right?
I mean, it was a huge contract, but now we know that they just brought a bunch of guys in. They paid them for a year.
Uh-huh.
They're eating some dead money, and they're rebooting essentially. But Bobby Wagner, I think people, because Seattle moved on, then he went to the Rams. 1 year later, the Rams said no, thank you. The thought around the league, if you're watching the film, is this guy can still play. But I get the sense the perception outside is maybe he's, you know, not what he used to be, and I don't think that's the case. That dude's a baller.
His lowest career tackle total in a season, he only played 11 games because of injury, 104. That's the lowest. It's a lot of 140s, 160s, 170 in 2021. I mean, I know that's not the end-all be-all. It's like we talk about sacks in terms of effectiveness. It's not always the thing, but that's still, you're in on a lot of plays, a lot of bold ink on that pitch.
They let Cody Barton walk, who was their starting linebacker this season, came to Washington, signed for a few million bucks. He's going to start for the Commanders probably next to Jamin Davis. They may replace him with the guy that Barton studied under for years if they can land Bobby Wagner into the weekend. Marquez Callaway, the talented wide receiver formerly of the New Orleans Saints, signed a 1-year deal today with the Denver Broncos. Callaway has speed, went for almost 700 yards 2 seasons ago, caught just 16 passes last year, had a 6 touchdown seasons within the last couple of years. The Broncos have quietly loaded up this offseason. Now, interestingly, they are trying to trade Jerry Jeudy. They're going to get Tim Patrick back from his torn ACL. Cortland Sutton bounced back year last year. Now they bring in Callaway. I'm not sure if they're going to keep KJ Hamler or not. The trading Judy thing, I don't really get. I guess he's been a little bit of a disappointment, but a new head coach. I'm not really sure what the idea is there. But they addressed the offensive line. They've spent a bunch of money. They brought in some help, depth, including Samaje Perine at running back. I mean, they haven't wasted much time since going and getting Sean Payton. They've been aggressive.
Yeah, stop if you've heard this before, but it might come down to how their quarterback plays. They've got so much invested in Russell Wilson, and it was such a disaster last year. But now you're trying to remove any possible excuse and just build the nest for him. Hopefully it pays off if you're a Broncos fan.
How about this one? Terrell Edmonds, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers, ties to the area, obviously. Going to Philadelphia, signing with the Eagles as their safety. He'll take over the role vacated by C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who left for the Lions on a one-year contract. Edmonds was a first-round pick by Pittsburgh in 2018, appeared in 15 or more games through his first five seasons in the league. He's been very durable. But he's really struggled in pass coverage at times. Career-high 4 receiving touchdowns against last season. Pittsburgh, after opposing receivers converted 67% of their targets into catches against him, decided to move on. He goes to Philadelphia. They're reworking that defense. They've lost 4 starters already this offseason.
Oh, they have. I didn't see any terms on that deal. Did you, Fredmans? Haven't yet. I will say this. I don't know all the teams that are in this little camp that I'm about to register, but I'll say this. Whenever Philadelphia does something, I always inevitably go, damn, that's smart. I don't know if it is or not, because as you said, Edmonds struggled a bit in Pittsburgh. And if you ask Pittsburgh folks, the fan opinion isn't necessarily gospel, but still, they weren't thrilled with that guy, and they'd probably say good riddance. But whatever Philadelphia does, it always feels shrewd to me. It always feels like they're a step ahead. That signing may stink. It may blow up in their face, and he may be terrible. He may be like that guy who was, I'm blanking on his name. Remember the Redskins safety who literally was in every highlight video trailing on long touchdowns? Mike Rumpf. He might be a Mike Rumpf clone, right? But who knows? But it just feels like it's a savvy thing where they're finding a post-type sleeper that they can make something from.
I wonder about the Eagles' defense. Jonathan Gannon left their defensive coordinator. They elevated Sean Desai, and I don't know a lot about him yet. Having said that, their secondary personnel gives me some pause at safety now. So Terrell Edmonds, who the Steelers said no thank you to and struggled, Reed Blankenship, right now supposed to play center field as their free safety, who is I believe a college free agent last year for them. So he's their starting free. You got Terrell Edmonds, who comes over from Pittsburgh as their strong safety. There's not a whole lot of depth that you've heard of behind those two guys. They did keep Darius Slay. They retained James Bradbury. They're pretty set at corner. Avante Maddox will come back healthy, be their nickel corner, I would imagine. Up front, Brandon Graham re-signed, Fletcher Cox re-signed. So those guys with Josh Sweat going to be formidable. They lost a couple of their best pass rushers from last year, though, so that stings. And they've lost one of their key linebackers, their leading tackler from last year. Now maybe they plug in Georgia linebacker N'Kobe Dean, who they drafted in the 3rd round, and they don't miss a beat. But at every single level of their defense, the Eagles have had a really rough last month or so. And if they just get worse on that side of the ball, we're all just assuming they're going to run through the East again and yep, win the division. It puts more pressure on Jalen Hurts to repeat a really hard-to-replicate MVP-type season last year offensively.
No, it does. I mean, and that's kind of, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Something has to give when you start having to pay some guys more. And if you want to keep an excellent offense, you might lose some stuff on defense. They got some guys waiting in the wings, like Jordan Davis didn't have much of an impact last year. Maybe he grows into something more. You've got different packages where, Reddick is on one side, and you still got Brandon Graham, and, Fletcher Cox came back on a cheap. So, I don't know. I don't think they'll fall off the face of the earth, but they won't be the dominant unit that they were at times last year.
Some wide receiver news. Remember DeAndre Carter, who was here in Washington, wide out, return man, went to the Chargers last year?
Receiver, yeah.
He was an outstanding return man for Washington and then last year in L.A. He's a free agent again. Jordan Schultz, rather, of The Score is reporting that he is visiting with the Vegas Raiders as we speak, so possibly staying in the AFC West. He actually was really good for the Chargers last year.
He was perfectly fine here, too, by the way.
He's got a chance to get a payday after breaking out. 46 catches, 538 yards last season in L.A. when they were missing some time from their top wide receivers, Keenan Allen, among their injuries last year at the position.
But look, we talked earlier about how De'Ami Brown could be traded, and we don't know what Washington thinks about Dax Milne. I'll tell you right now, though, DeAndre Carter is a down-the-depth-chart fourth receiver with who can play teams. I'll take him over either of those guys.
100%.
Like, he proved he can play and run routes and make catches here. He was even better in a different offense last year with the Chargers. And he is an asset as a return man. I don't know what the price tag's going to be, but that's the kind of player to me who this team unearthed. He was basically headed toward being out of the league after getting an opportunity in Houston. We talked to him. It was a great story. He was like a substitute teacher when he got the call to come back and try for Washington to get back on the field. And they revitalized his career, but then they let him walk for a couple $100,000.
Yeah, this is the always, I don't get what I'm missing with guys like this. Nobody's telling you he's your number one or even your number two. Nobody's saying that. That's a helpful player to have on your football team. I don't get why there's never enough interest for dudes like that are, I don't know, tough to tackle, that are quick, that can make something out of nothing. As you said, good return man. I would find something for him to do in my offense.
The Panthers have a new wideout as they try to move on without DJ Moore. They brought in another DJ. DJ Chark.
DJ Chark.
DJ Chark. DJ Chark. Panthers signed him, formerly of the Detroit Lions, the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1 year, $5 million. Feels a little bit steep for me for DJ Chark. I mean, I guess he did once go for 1,000 yards, but, man, that's a lot of money, it feels like. No one's getting $5 million guaranteed right now to go be a backup, so maybe this is the plan for them, I guess, at wide receiver at this point.
So good luck, rookie quarterback.
1,000 yards was 4 years ago. 700 yards was 3 years ago. Then he made 7 catches in 2021, got hurt. Last year, 30 catches for 500 yards and a really good Lions offense.
Don't they also have Laviska Shenault? Also former Jacksonville Jaguar?
They're reassembling the Jags lineup from like 2019.
Anytime you can do that, I think you have to jump at the chance. I don't know, man. Listen, I know Carolina's going to have to – well, I actually don't know. I actually don't get it, to be honest with you. I know that David Tepper like stepped in and was like, get me a quarterback now. He should also be like, get me way better players than this now.
I mean, honestly, it's a great fit for Chark because I do think he'll get targets.
He'll get time. Yeah, it's Terrace Marshall and Adam Thielen opposite him.
So that's the other thing I was going to mention is they went and got Thielen. Now, at this point of his career, Adam Thielen is no longer a separator. He's not a number one by any means. They paid him good money. He might end up being their most targeted receiver. They might use him almost like you use a tight end as the great safety valve for a young quarterback and a nice security blanket. They also, and I give them credit for this, they went and got a tight end. And you know this about me if you listen to this show.
Do you like tight ends, Grant?
I think the best thing you can do for a young quarterback is to get them a tight end who can get open and win on choice routes. And they went and got Hayden Hurst from Cincinnati, the former Falcon. So it's not like they don't have any weapons. They've got Hurst, Thielen, who is declining, but particularly in the red zone, very sharp route runner, can still make some plays. DJ Chark now becomes perhaps their best wide out on the outside to try to win. And Terrace Marshall, at some point, second-round pick 2021, everyone loved that guy coming out of the draft. It's kind of now or never time for him, right? I mean, at some point, he's either going to be a good football player or not, and there's no reason not to give him a chance to break out this year. Finally, wide receiver news in Baltimore. The Ravens have added former Eagle Nelson Aguilar. He's bounced around from the Raiders to the Patriots recently. One-year deal, about $3 million for him as the Ravens try to prepare offensively, despite the fact that they still don't know who their quarterback is going to be. But they are a receiver-starved team and have been for years. Rashad Bateman, Devin Duvernay, Nelson Aguilar, and Andy Isabella, I guess, right now. Maybe a little bit of James Prochet on the side. That's what they're working with. The offense goes through Andrews and Isaiah Likely at tight end for Lamar Jackson.
What is Aguilar? Like, what is he? Is he a deep threat? Is he a slot guy? Is he in between? Like, what is he?
I think when he's been used best in his, now, I think, 8 years probably
he's
in the
league. He's been in the league forever. 1 year in Vegas.
He was a burner for them.
He's down the field.
He went basically for 900 yards, and he was about 19 yards a catch, and he got opened a lot. That's how I would use him.
It feels like nobody else has done that, though. They've always done something else with him, which seems very square peg, round holy. That's my thought.
I think, yeah, whatever the Raiders did, I'm going back, I'm studying that film, and I'm saying he was actually really good for a season.
Yeah.
How did that work? Let's do that. There you go, the latest from the NFL on Grant and Danny. We'll hit the headlines before we get out of here at 6 o'clock with DC Sports Weekend Preview coming your way and the weirdest vegetable that exists that you might not know about. I learned about it today, and I just can't stop thinking about it. That's next on The Fan. Stretch run of Grant and Danny. Rather than taking you up to 6:30 as we normally do, we're out at 6 tonight because you'll be hearing the NCAA tournament right here on The Fan. Got some thoughts, as Danny does, on what could lie ahead this weekend on a possible sale and the next step for Dan Snyder and transitioning out of owning the Washington Commanders. This happened, though, today before I left the house, and I wanted to bring it up. No time like the present. It's kind of now or never. If you and I will discuss this today, Dan.
Indeed.
So I have heard of artichoke dip.
Sure.
I'm familiar with artichoke dip. You know what an actual artichoke looks like?
It's weird. Yeah. It's like a flower that was petrified. It looks like a flower fossil.
Not a bad comp. They call it a globe, which doesn't make sense. But they're like these like almost prickly leaves. It's very cool looking.
Yeah.
It looks like I don't know if petrified does the trick, but a flower that kind of sealed up.
Yeah, that's what I said.
All the leaves, right?
Right.
Yeah,
you can see
an artichoke.
Yeah, that's an artichoke.
So my mother-in-law is at my house today,
mm-hmm.
and she's just planning on eating an artichoke. She's super excited about it.
She's going to eat it.
She's talking about it. She's just telling us that she's going to steam an artichoke and eat it. You know how people eat an artichoke, though? Are you familiar with this at all?
I don't think I've ever actually seen someone like gnaw at an artichoke.
This is what's amazing to me.
Okay.
So what do you think? Like, look at that thing. What do you think someone would do to eat an artichoke?
Well, I think... I'm going to embarrass myself here.
Because I thought it was weird, but as I asked more people today in my life, a lot of people have never seen anyone eat an artichoke.
Yeah, now I've pummeled crab and artichoke dip before because it's delicious.
It's just a liquidy, gooey, delicious treat that you dip a cracker into.
So much joy. Like the little tiny mini breads that are so good. I feel like the stuff on the outside, I feel like that's like dinosaur scales. I think you got to get those off.
Okay.
So this is my instinct. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to boil it, and then maybe I can peel those off because I softened it.
Well, she's going to steam the artichoke.
Yeah.
But like the actual consumption, so then you're peeling off that exterior layer of leaves.
And then the parts inside are, I don't know how to, it's like, they're also leaves, but they're different than the scales. To me, scales outside, inside kind of a soft buttressed layer of leaves that kind of come together to form the center.
So you're not completely off base. I would say, though, you are partially off base. You're actually going to eat plenty of those leaves that you're looking at.
So I'm picked off like Victor Robles still?
Yes,
wow.
You are. Ryan is chomping at the bit. He's raising his hand. He's telling me he knows how to eat an artichoke. So I guess that means we need to let Ryan explain it
all right, here we go.
This could actually be a deposit in the bank for you to take away one of those withdrawals in the past. Where if you can explain something that Danny struggled with, that would be a good look for you.
You know, the Clary household, when I was growing up, I lived off artichokes. This
Come
is
on.
What you do. Those petals out there that you see, those little prickly things, you're going to pull those suckers off. And you will boil it as well. You could boil it. You could bake it. You could put it in the microwave with a damp cloth over it. Here's what we did. We boiled it, mm-hmm. and then this is what you do.
I'm sure you put a damp cloth over it in the microwave.
Well, you could do it. You could do that.
Like a paper towel?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking of like a small like dish
okay.
towel.
Yeah, you're right. A damp paper towel. Oh, how
okay.
about that?
We'll take
so
it.
So here's what you do. After that thing is baked or whatever you do with it, you pull those little petals off, the prickly things, and you dip it in a little butter, and that end that is attached to the artichoke heart, that is where you scoop it off, you slide it off the brim of your mouth, and it is amazing.
He's literally 100% right. First of all, it's the dumbest thing in the world. This is what I told my mother-in-law, and I'm going to tell Ryan and everyone else who's ever eaten an artichoke.
Okay.
This is so stupid. This is the equivalent of picking a crab for literally. So you see
yeah.
the picture.
Yeah.
All those leaves, you pluck them off. There's like a little tiny bit of it that is like actually protruding into Imagine it like hairs off of your arm where a little bit of the hair is going into the skin.
Yeah.
So a little bit of those leaves are going into like whatever the, for lack of a better term, the core, the heart.
The heart is.
It's the heart. And they call it the heart, right? I don't know if it's really, it's not like my heart. I'll tell you that much. Okay. But so you pull this leaf off and there is a different colored, almost a white colored bottom of the leaf that was in the heart. The whole point of the process is then to dip that in butter, basically, or something. And then you just put it in your mouth, but pull it back out. And you just, with your teeth, kind of like catch a little bit of what I would consider to be like chewed up peanuts. Like a tiny little bit off of each leaf. That's what you're getting. You're getting almost like a, I don't know if creamy is the right word, but it's just like sticks to the back of your teeth and then you swallow it. That's what this is.
Wow.
Can you imagine that kind of work for a vegetable?
No.
It's like chewing sunflower seeds if sunflower seeds were a vegetable, bro. Makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. And I'm if I had to boil sunflower seeds for 25 minutes, I wouldn't be doing that either.
Of course you wouldn't.
No.
Do you think anything major happens on the sale this weekend?
I don't. I just think I think that we're still full steam ahead, but it's just too complicated.
I think we get some type of major development and story that we open the show with Monday.
Ooh.
I don't think it leads to a vote at the meetings, but I think it is the story and the talk of the meetings. That's my guess. For the crew behind the scenes and Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Enjoy the tournament tonight on The Fan.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!